Right. So I'm Arun, and this talk is going to be about a new way of thinking about data analysis in network systems. Okay. So what's the problem currently? Users have questions, and as network users, we all have had these kind of questions. A typical process to get answers is by collecting data and then probing the data for answers. Data is of many types from network systems. And this process of extracting the answers requires a lot of expertise and is heavily dependent upon the user's understanding of the system operation. Using current approaches, we see that this process is generally very detailed and tedious and can quickly become very cognitively burdening. We introduce a semantic framework, which is a different way of tackling these kinds of problems, of data analysis problems. Essentially, the semantic framework provides mechanisms wherein an expert user can capture the high level capture his high level understanding of the system as models, and then a user who wants to analyze data and has questions over the data can use this knowledge base of models to pose questions and then get answers to his questions. So the key here is that the models essentially are abstract models, and they capture the understanding of the system by an expert in a very abstract way. Once these models are in a knowledge base, a user generally uses them, and then he just has to modify them and or extend them as his questions, and then his job becomes very easy because now he is interacting with the data at a semantically higher level. So the key in our system is that the models drive analysis over data. Right. So before we take a look at the details, I just want to set the context of the work by comparing it with the other approaches. So we compare it along two dimensions. I set the context of the work along two dimensions. On the X as the level of analysis abstraction, where the analysis abstraction is essentially the mechanisms provided by the approach to operate over data. And the performance is the performance of the analysis abstraction. So the typical approaches are broadly classified into five categories. To the extreme left are pattern-based approaches. So these are essentially the approaches that anyone would use when they are operating over, let's say, something like a packet dump, or just using simple Boolean filters or Boolean queries. As we move to the right, we have more structured approaches, like for example SQL queries or say Splunk, which are a little bit more sophisticated than just simple filters or patterns. Then as we move along, we have language based approaches. Examples in that category are like Bro or Sec, which operate at a semantically higher level over the data. Finally, we get to the logic based approaches to the extreme right. Now, to the lower left are the custom scripts or tools that people generally write to do analysis always. Now, these tools could have low to high performance, but then generally these are written in a very custom way and hence are not generally reusable or reapplicable in any other situations. The semantic analysis framework is essentially a logic-based approach, as in we provide a logic-based mechanism for building these models. Now, along the x-axis, you can see that at the lower ends of the x-axis, the approaches, the analysis approaches we see are generally very low level and they operate at very low level, operate over the data at very low level of details. In a sense, they are, in a sense, what they provide is they are very low in expressiveness, but they are high in performance. And because they operate over data at a very low level of detail, they're also very less reusable. As we move along the x-axis, we see that the abstractions become more and more semantically more meaningful. Finally, at the higher end of the axis, now this is not the highest, I'm just saying this is the higher, it could be anything more than that. So the semantic analysis frameworks provides models. Where the models provide high expressiveness to the users. At the same time, they give usable performance. And they're also, a key point is that they're also reusable. We'll see what these things mean in the later slides. Now, compared to the logic-based approaches themselves, the semantic framework differs in two key aspects. Okay, so one more point was that we, as a design choice, we actually trade performance for expressiveness. All right. So in terms of the differences with other logic-based approaches, the semantic approach differs in two ways. For one, we provide composable abstractions to capture semantics. And second, we provide mechanisms or operators to express relationships which are more useful to network systems, which are more useful for network systems analysis. All right. Let's see what those two things are. So at the lowest level, we have data, which could be considered as facts or evidence about a system or a process. Just to motivate the idea, let's assume that these facts, for example, a file open or a file close of, or a TCP packet or anything like that, are represented by these, are represented symbolically by these shapes. Key to our approach is in the notion is in the introduction of a notion of a behavior as a fundamental unit of analysis, as a fundamental abstraction, where a behavior is defined as a sequence or group of one or more related facts. So, given looking at the example, it's easy to see how these shapes can be grouped together in based on their shapes. Now the the key point to note here is that these units, once grouped, can now be used as atoms themselves to now form more complex behaviors. So we can form more complex behavior by relating these individual behaviors, like as shown here. And so finally, as we go ahead, we finally get to the point where we finally have a model, which is essentially just a top-level behavior about the system. So in a sense, this fundamental abstraction of behavior allows us to encode higher-level system semantics or very easily. Another key point to note here is that the behavior, the most important aspect of a behavior is the relationship it encodes. So in a sense, a behavior is only as useful as the relationship that it can capture. And in the simple example, the relationships were very easy to see, but in network systems, the relationships could be very complex. So a second key aspect of the modeling approach is in the kinds of relationships that we can express in the modeling language. Now, based upon the characteristics of network systems, the core characteristics of network systems, there are at least four broad categories of relationships that we thought were useful to provide as a modeling language, to provide in the modeling language. So first of them are temporal relationships. So temporal relationships are, for example, relationships like causality, ordering, eventuality, invariance, or synchrony or timing. For example, a user might need to express something like, okay, a file open eventually led to a file close. Now, this is a temporal, it's a causal relationship. Similarly, we have another category of relationship called concurrent relationships, which are relationships like parallelism or overlaps. For example, someone would want to expose that HTTP and FTP flows are concurrent. Then there are the staple of logical relationships like combinations, exclusions. As an example, you might one might want to express something like an experiment either succeeds or fails. Finally, there are relationships which are also dependency relationships between the attributes of the data itself. For example, a file open and a file close behaviors are related by their file names, as in the file open and file close have to have the same file name for them to be grouped in the same behavior. The language provides operators for capturing each category of these relationships. Essentially, we provide, for example, we write temporal operators to capture this the whole list of temporal relationships. For example, the example shown of the file open eventually leading to a file close can be very neatly expressed by the simple operator, which is the squiggly arrow, which means leads to, eventually leads to. Then for the, and there are many more of these operators in the paper. I'm just taking an example here. The concurrent relationships can be, can be expressed here just as shown, just by using the OLAP operator, which means that the flows are overlapping, and so on and so forth. This is easy to understand. So the key point here is that the expressing these relationships using these operators is essential to build these abstract models and hence capture semantics. So the key point is that to have semantics, we need to capture relationships, and that's how the framework becomes semantic, a semantic framework. All right. So now let's put these ideas into use and see how we can actually define a fairly complex behavior by in the form of a cache poisoning attack. So the goal here is to actually model this behavior of a cache poisoning. The setup, let's say, consists of three nodes: an attacker, a victim, and a real name server. And the objective of the attacker is to poison the victim's cache. The experiment proceeds in four steps. The first step, the attacker sends a query. Second step, the victim forwards the query to the real name server. Then the attacker and the victim both compete for sending the responses to the victim. If the attacker guesses the right response and sends his response before the real name server can, he wins and poisons the cache. Now, this is a very abstract model or abstract working of this cache poisoning behavior, especially of the DNS Kaminsky variant. All right. In a typical scenario, these four steps keep running in a loop. And you would have this, and that's how the attacks are generally done using this behavior. Now, it's there are a few key issues here to understand before we model this. So one is that the attacker can fail to poison the cache due to essentially two reasons. One is because of the race conditions, and second, because of incorrectly guessed responses. Now, consider that a user is trying to actually extract or analyze this sort of behavior over data using a standard typical approach, let's say using a TCP dump. So if the user wants to do this analysis and extract all the packets or this attack from this data, it requires extreme amount of expertise, because the user has to exactly know, first of all, these four sequence of steps, and then the relationships between all the values in the attributes, all the details of the data to actually extract these. And over tens of thousands of packets, it's absolutely not possible. It becomes cognitively overloading. Secondly, there are just too many random values in the data to extract using just simple patterns. So it is it's just difficult for the user to go over each and every pair of values to extract. Third, the race conditions are hard to debug, as we have already mentioned. And then there are many ways to fail. So let's see how a user using the semantic framework can actually do this sort of analysis here. So like I introduced earlier, we have an expert who understands this behavior well. And this tree this model is essentially the model that the expert builds. And he has this model in his head, and this is how he thinks about the experiment in terms of just the four steps that we described. And each node here, each node in the tree is essentially a simple behavior, which is analogous to what we described as using those two shapes as a grouping of the shapes. Each arrow here is representing a causal relationship between those steps, those four steps that the cache poisoning behavior has. Then every path here from the root to the leaf is essentially a complex behavior, just like the way we had described earlier. For example, for the attack to succeed, the path is highlighted by the green. So essentially what happens is the attacker has to send the correct response to the victim, and only then the real name server responds. So this essentially captures the higher level model, and that's all that the expert actually wants to capture. Here you can see that the expert is not really capturing the details about what should be the values of these facts or values of these the actual data. He's just encoding the he just models as if this is a model of his higher level of understanding of the behavior. So similarly, we have failures towards the left, where a failure happens where the real name server responds first, and only then the attacker sends the correct responses. So just the flipping of these states essentially captures this fact. Flipping of the states as compared to the success captures the failure due to the timing. Then there are other two failures where we have the attacker, he guesses the wrong response, and hence the attack fails. And similarly for the fourth part. So in all, the model essentially, the behavior model essentially just consists of one success and three failures. Now, this is a limited set, but there could be many more like this. But the point here is to see that this model succinctly captures the user's higher level understanding of the behavior. Now, once this model is created by the expert, the modeling framework allows us to directly encode this model into code. We have a syntax which allows one to encode this type of a model directly. So essentially, the steps required are: first, you capture the first step required is to capture the simple behaviors, which are each and every node, and so this a corresponding line of code is shown here. The key point to note here is that there are no values specified. Everything is written in the form of relationships, and the details of this code and the whole code is in the paper, and the details and the details are in the paper for that. Yeah. The second step is to then relate these simple behaviors to form complex behaviors, essentially just to capture the causal relationship between steps. So for example, the path on the left is very easily captured with this one line and those squiggly arrows capturing the causal relationship between the states. Finally, we define the model, which is essentially just assertion, which captures the user's understanding of the system operation. Here, it just says that there's one way to succeed, and there are three ways to fail, and they are like mutually exclusive. So, in a sense, what we have achieved here is that we took an expert's high-level understanding of the behavior of a system, and then converted it into a model. Now, this model can be used by a user along with data to now query the system or ask questions over the system, over the data. So let's see how that is done. So actually putting the model to use, we take this model, which is written by an expert, let's say, and the model in the paper is about 20 lines of model. Given that, you have, and given the data, a user might want to ask a question, okay, did the poisoning succeed or fail? Input to the framework, and then we get answers in the form of facts which satisfy the model. So essentially what this model has done is it drives the analysis and enables the framework to extract the facts that that satisfy that model. So the user now here has an answer. It says that, okay, there's a failure, and it corresponds to the timing failure here, the timing fail behavior that we saw earlier, in which the attacker loses the race against R. All right. So just a quick note on the current implementation and performance. The current implementation of the algorithm is a prototype algorithm for applying models over data. The algorithm has an ON score worst case performance when using too many dependent attributes. It's a very straightforward implementation. It's not optimized. And the analysis framework itself is written in Python with a SQLite storage-based backend. And we are investigating the scalability and performance issues of the overall framework actively now. Applicability-wise, we believe that this thing applies to a broad range of event-based modeling and network systems. There are more examples of this in the paper, where we show how we can model hypotheses, we can model security threats, and then model dynamic change in the system. As far as future work, we want to really look at extending the model's capabilities. We want to model probabilistic behavior, model packet distributions, and a few more things. But key for now is we are, as I mentioned, investigating the scalability and performance and trying to reduce the computation complexity when there are too many dependent attributes in the models. Finally, I just want to talk about three important aspects three important benefits of actually being able to capture these abstract models. So one of them is, since these models are abstract, these models could be composed to create higher level meaning. So all the boxes shown here essentially are models which have been created, let's say, by some expert. A newer model of a worm could be created by combining the model that we just created of DNS Kaminsky and combining them with some other model, let's say the port scan model. Second, since these models are abstract, they can easily be shared, and because they are not dependent on any particular data, and such models could then form a repository of expertise. We envision that such models could be organized in domain dependent knowledge bases, and which would capture domain dependent expertise, which could then be reused for many purposes. Like, for example, two of them are for exploratory data analysis. Like a user could just explore his data by using these models directly. Or another ability would be of actually enabling sharing and reuse of experiments. Today, it's difficult to share experiments, but by having such an approach, one could ship his data along with a model of the data so that anyone else could easily run the model over the data and then verify the results. So with that, I conclude. And we have the prototype version of the framework is going to be available publicly very soon. We have a mailing list up on the website, so if you please register so that you can keep up to date with the development. Thank you. I will take some questions. Yes. So actually, the way this work started was because I had actually taken the bottom-up approach. The problem with data mining was that so at some point, we were not able to make sense of the mining rules. And I mean, there was just too many rules, association rules that would get produced. So and it would be very difficult to make sense of what those actually meant. So then we started thinking of how can we actually encode commonly known information, because networks, I mean, the protocols are well known, behaviors are well known. So if you could encode such knowledge, data mining, it would allow data mining to work with some context. So now if we apply data mining along with some context given by these models, it would make much, it would help in deriving or extracting models which are much more meaningful and they are semantically more relevant. So instead of just letting the data mining tools run over data by just looking at them as packets and values, or facts and values, now we have something which will allow them to operate over higher level behaviors, so which is more semantically meaningful. So that was the,
Jason Lee from AI. Actually, the session chair asked partially my question also in terms of this semantics. My question is, in terms of this composability, this is actually a big issue. It seems to me that you are doing this composition using some manual efforts. You did not really define why you have this composability. And this also goes to the session chair's question, you know, how can you even bridge top-down and bottom-up? So, but anyway, to make it simpler, what do you mean by composability here? Or this is a total manual effort? Or the model, all the semantics, everything goes from comes from the human expert. You're not really dealing with it.
No, so here, so yeah, it's completely manual for now. But the point is that the models that are created are abstract, and they encode the expertise directly in terms of semantically meaningful relationships. So for you to encode a model, we captured the behavior in about 20 lines of model, right? For the example that was shown. So this model can now be composed of, if I want to define a behavior of a worm, I can take this model without worrying about the details and just use the model directly to build higher level model. So it gives me the ability to just express, having many of these models will then allow me to do more and more semantically meaningful stuff.
Right. So the semantically meaningful stuff comes from the human expert, and
right.
You're actually using this coded model
right.
to check against, to sweep through the data. That's
right.
Pretty much the idea.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.